Chapter 4. The Gleeman. The door of the inn banged shut behind the white-haired man, and he spun around to glare at it. Lean, he would have been tall if not for a stoop to his shoulders, but he moved in a spry fashion that belied his apparent age. His cloak seemed a mass of patches, in odd shapes and sizes, fluttering with every breath of air. Patches in 100 colors. It was really quite thick, Rand saw, despite what Master Olivier had said, with the patches merely sewn on like decorations.
"The Gleeman," Egwene whispered excitedly.
The white-haired man whirled, cloak flaring. His long coat had odd baggy sleeves and big pockets. Thick mustaches, as snowy as the hair on his head, quivered around his mouth, and his face was gnarled like a tree that had seen hard times. He gestured imperiously at Rand and the others with a long-stemmed pipe, ornately carved, that trailed a wisp of smoke. Blue eyes peered out from under bushy white brows, drilling into whatever he looked at. Rand stared at the man's eyes almost as much as at the rest of him. Everybody in the Two Rivers had dark eyes, and so did most of the merchants and their guards, and everyone else he had ever seen. The Congers and the Coplins had made fun of him for his gray eyes, until the day he finally punched Ewol Coplin in the nose. The wisdom had surely gotten onto him for that. He wondered if there was a place where nobody had dark eyes. Maybe Lan comes from there, too.
"What sort of place is this?"
the Gleeman demanded in a deep voice that sounded in some way larger than that of an ordinary man. Even in the open air, it seemed to fill a great room and resonate from the walls.
"The yokels in that village on the hill tell me I can get here before dark, neglecting to say that that was only if I left well before noon. When I finally do arrive, chilled to the bone and ready for a warm bed, your innkeeper grumbles about the hour as if I were a wandering swineherd, and your village council hadn't begged me to display my art at this festival of yours. And he never even told me he was the mayor."
He slowed for a breath, taking them all in with a glare, but he was off again on the instant.
"When I came downstairs to smoke my pipe before the fire and have a mug of ale, every man in the common room stares at me as if I were his least favorite brother-in-law seeking to borrow money. One old grandfather starts ranting at me about the kind of stories I should or should not tell. Then a girl child shouts at me to get out and threatens me with a great club when I don't move quickly enough for her. Who ever heard of treating a gleeman so?"
Egwene's face was a study, her goggle-eyed amaze at a gleeman in the flesh marred by a desire to defend Nynaeve.
"Your pardon, Master Gleeman," Rand said.
He knew he was grinning foolishly himself.
"That was our wisdom, and—"
"That pretty little slip of a girl?"
the gleeman exclaimed.
"A village wisdom? Why, at her age she should be better flirting with the young men than foretelling the weather and curing the sick."
Rand shifted uncomfortably. He hoped Nynaeve never overheard the man's opinion. At least, not until he had done with his performing. Perrin winced at the gleeman's words, and Matt whistled soundlessly, as if both had had the same thought as he had.
"The men were the village council," Rand went on. "I'm sure they intended no discourtesy. You see, we just learned there's a war in Gil'dan, and a man claiming to be the dragon reborn. A false dragon. Aes Sedai are riding there from Tar Valon. The council is trying to decide if we might be in danger here."
"Old news, even in Baerlon," the gleeman said dismissively. "And that is the last place in the world to hear anything."
He paused, looking around the village, and dryly added,
"Almost the last place."
Then his eyes fell on the wagon in front of the inn, standing alone now, with its shafts on the ground.
"So, I thought I recognized Pa Dunfane in there."
His voice was still deep, but the resonance had gone, replaced by scorn.
"Fane was always one to carry bad news quickly, and the worse, the faster. There's more raven in him than man."
"Master Fane has come often to Emmons Field, Master Gleeman," Egwene said, a hint of disapproval finally breaking through her delight. "He is always full of laughter, and he brings much more good news than bad."
The Gleeman eyed her for a moment, then smiled broadly.
"Now you're a lovely lass. You should have rosebuds in your hair. Unfortunately, I cannot pull roses from the air, not this year.
But how would you like to stand beside me tomorrow for a part of my performance? Hand me my flute when I want it, and certain other apparatus. I always choose the prettiest girl I can find as my assistant."
Perrin snickered, and Matt, who had been snickering, laughed out loud. Rand blinked in surprise. Egwene was glaring at him, and he had not even smiled. She straightened around and spoke in a too calm voice.
"Thank you, Master Gleeman. I would be happy to assist you."
"Tom Marilyn,"
the Gleeman said. They stared.
"My name is Tom Marilyn, not Master Gleeman."
He hitched the multi-hued cloak up on his shoulders, and abruptly his voice once more seemed to reverberate in a great hall.
"Once a court bard, I am now indeed risen to the exalted rank of Master Gleeman, yet my name is plain Tom Marilyn, and Gleeman is the simple title in which I glory."
And he swept a bow so elaborate with flourishes of his cloak that Matt clapped and Egwene murmured appreciatively.
Master Marilyn,
Matt said, unsure exactly what form of address to take out of what Tom Marilyn had said.
"What is happening in Gildan? Do you know anything about this false dragon, or the Aes Sedai?"
"Do I look like a peddler, boy?"
the Gleeman grumbled, tapping out his pipe on the heel of his palm. He made the pipe disappear somewhere inside his cloak or his coat. Rand was not sure where it had gone or how.
"I'm a Gleeman, not a newsmonger. And I make a point of never knowing anything about Aes Sedai. Much safer that way."
"But the war,"
Matt began eagerly, only to be cut off by Master Marilyn.
"In wars, boy, fools kill other fools for foolish causes. That's enough for anyone to know. I am here for my art."
Suddenly he thrust a finger at Rand.
"You, lad, you're a tall one. Not with your full growth on you yet, but I doubt there's another man in the district with your height. Not many in the village with eyes that color either, I'll wager. The point is, you're an axe handle across the shoulders and as tall as an Aiel man. What's your name, lad?"
Rand gave it hesitantly, not sure whether or not the man was making fun of him, but the Gleeman had already turned his attention to Perrin.
"And you have almost the size of an Ogier."
"Close enough.
How are you called?"
"Not unless I stand on my own shoulders," Perrin laughed. "I'm afraid Rand and I are just ordinary folk, Master Marilyn. Not made-up creatures from your stories. I'm Perrin Ibarra." Tom Marilyn tugged at one of his mustaches.
"Well, now, made-up creatures from my stories. Is that what they are? You lads are widely traveled, then, it seems."
Rand kept his mouth shut. Certain they were the butt of a joke now, but Perrin spoke up.
"We've all been as far as Watch Hill and Devon Ride. Not many around here have gone as far."
He was not boasting. Perrin seldom did. He was just telling the truth.
"We've all seen the mire, too," Matt added,
and he did sound boastful.
"That's the swamp at the far end of the Waterwood. Nobody at all goes there. It's full of quicksands and bogs, except us. And nobody goes to the Mountains of Mist, either. But we did once, to the foot of them, anyway."
"As far as that,"
the Gleeman murmured, brushing at his mustaches now continually. Rand thought he was hiding a smile, and he saw that Perrin was frowning.
"It's bad luck to enter the mountains," Matt said, as if he had to defend himself for not going further. "Everybody knows that."
"That's just foolishness, Matrim Cawthon," Egwene cut in angrily. "Nynaeve says..."
She broke off, her cheeks turning pink, and the look she gave Tom Marilyn was not as friendly as it had been.
"It is not right to make... It isn't..."
Her face went redder, and she fell silent. Matt blinked, as if he was just getting a suspicion of what had been going on.
"You're right, child," the Gleeman said contritely. "I apologize humbly. I am here to entertain. Ah, my tongue has always gotten me into trouble."
"Maybe we haven't traveled as far as you," Perrin said flatly. "But what does how tall Rand is have to do with anything?"
"Just this, lad. A little later I will let you try to pick me up, but you won't be able to lift my feet from the ground. Not you, nor your tall friend there, Rand, is it? Nor any other man. Now what do you think of that?"
Perrin snorted a laugh.
"I think I can lift you right now."
But when he stepped forward, Tom Marilyn motioned him back.
"Later, lad, later. when there are more folk to watch. An artist needs an audience.
A score of folk had gathered on the green since the gleeman appeared from the inn, young men and women down to children who peeked wide-eyed and silent from behind the older onlookers. All looked as if they were waiting for miraculous things from the gleeman. The white-haired man looked them over. He appeared to be counting them, then gave a slight shake of his head and sighed.
I suppose I had better give you a small sample, so you can run tell the others, eh? Just a taste of what you'll see tomorrow at your festival.
He took a step back and suddenly leaped into the air, twisting and somersaulting to land facing them atop the old stone foundation. More than that, three balls, red, white, and black, began dancing between his hands even as he landed. A soft sound came from the watchers, half astonishment, half satisfaction. Even Rand forgot his irritation. He flashed Egwene a grin and got a delighted one in return. Then both turned to stare unabashedly at the gleeman.
You want stories? Tom Maryland declaimed. I have stories and I'll give them to you. I'll make them come alive before your eyes.
A blue ball joined the others from somewhere, then a green one and a yellow.
Tales of great wars and great heroes for the men and boys. For the women and girls, the entire Aptarogyne cycle. Tales of Artur Pendrag, Tanriol, Artur Hawkwing, Artur the High King, who once ruled all the lands from the Aiel Waste to the Areth Ocean, and even beyond. Wondrous stories of strange people and strange lands, of the Green Man, of Warders and Trollocs, of Ogier and Aiel, the Thousand Tales of Anla, the Wise Counselor, Jaime, the Giant Slayer, how Susa tamed Jain Farstrider, Mara and the Three Foolish Kings.
Tell us about Len, Egwene called, how he flew to the moon in the belly of an eagle made of fire. Tell about his daughter, Salya, walking among the stars.
Rand looked at her out of the corner of his eye, but she seemed intent on the Gleeman. She had never liked stories about adventures and long journeys. Her favorites were always the funny ones, or stories about women outwitting people who were supposed to be smarter than everyone else. He was sure she had asked for tales about Len and Salya to put a burr under his shirt. Surely she could see the world outside was no place for Two Rivers folk. Listening to tales of adventures, even dreaming about them, was one thing. Having them take place around you would be something else again.
Old stories, those, Tom Maryland said,
and abruptly he was juggling three colored balls with each hand.
Stories from the age before the age of legends, some say. Perhaps even older. But I have old stories, mind you now, of ages that were and will be. Ages when men ruled the heavens and the stars, and ages when man roamed as brother to the animals. Ages of wonder and ages of horror. Ages ended by fire raining from the skies, and ages doomed by snow and ice covering land and sea. I have all stories, and I will tell all stories. Tales of Mosk the Giant with his lance of fire that could reach around the world, and his wars with Alsbet, the Queen of All. Tales of Mutaris, the Healer, Mother of the Wondrous Ind.
The balls now danced between Tom's hands in two intertwining circles. His voice was almost a chant, and he turned slowly as he spoke, as if surveying the onlookers to gauge his effect.
I will tell you of the end of the Age of Legends, of the dragon, and his attempt to free the Dark One into the world of men. I will tell of the time of madness, when Aes Sedai shattered the world, of the Trolloc Wars, when men battled Trollocs for rule of the earth, of the War of the Hundred Years, when men battled men, and the nations of our day were wrought. I will tell the adventures of men and women, rich and poor, great and small, proud and humble. The siege of the Pillars of the Sky. How goodwife Carol cured her husband of snoring. How Darith and the fall of the House of...
Abruptly the flow of words and the juggling alike stopped. Tom simply snatched the balls from the air and stopped talking. Unnoticed by Rand, Moraine had joined the listeners. Lan was at her shoulder, though he had to look twice to see the man. For a moment, Tom looked at Moraine sideways, his face and body still except for making the balls disappear into his capacious coat sleeves. Then he bowed to her, holding his cloak wide.
Your pardon, but you are surely not from this district.
Lady,
Ewen hissed fiercely.
The Lady Moraine.
Tom blinked, then bowed again, more deeply.
Your pardon again, lady. I meant no disrespect.
Moraine made a small waving away gesture.
None was perceived, Master Bard, and my name is simply Moraine. I am indeed a stranger here, a traveler like yourself, far from home and alone. The world can be a dangerous place when one is a stranger.
The Lady Moraine collects stories, Edwin put in. Stories about things that happened in the Two Rivers. Though I don't know whatever happened here to make a story of.
I trust you will like my stories as well, Moraine.
Tom watched her with obvious wariness. He looked not best pleased to find her there. Suddenly Rand wondered what sort of entertainment a lady like her might be offered in a city like Berlan or Camelin. Surely it could not be anything better than a gleeman.
That is a matter of taste, Master Bard, Moraine replied. Some stories I like, and some I do not.
Tom's bow was his deepest yet, bending his long body parallel to the ground.
I assure you, none of my stories will displease. All will please and entertain. And you do me too much honor. I am a simple gleeman. That and nothing more.
Moraine answered his bow with a gracious nod. For an instant she seemed even more the Lady Elwyn had named her, accepting an offering from one of her subjects. Then she turned away, and Lan followed, a wolf healing a gliding swan. Tom stared after them, bushy brows drawn down, stroking his long mustaches with a knuckle, until they were halfway up the green.
He's not pleased at all, Rand thought. Are you going to juggle some more now?
Edwin demanded.
Eat fire, Matt shouted. I want to see you eat fire. The harp,
a voice cried from the crowd.
Play the harp.
Someone else called for the flute. At that moment, the door of the inn opened, and the village council trundled out, Nynaeve in their midst. Padan Fane was not with them, Rand saw. Apparently the peddler had decided to remain in the warm common room with his mulled wine. Muttering about
a strong brandy,
Tom Merlin abruptly jumped down from the old foundation. He ignored the cries of those who had been watching him, pressing inside past the councillors before they were well out of the doorway.
Is he supposed to be a gleeman or a king? Senbuie asked in annoyed tones. A waste of good money, if you ask me.
Bran Alvear half turned after the gleeman, then shook his head.
That man may be more trouble than he's worth.
Nynaeve, busy gathering her cloak around her, sniffed loudly.
Worry about the gleeman if you want, Brandelwyn Alvear. At least he is in Emmons Field, which is more than you can say for this false dragon. But as long as you are worrying, there are others here who should excite your worry.
If you please, Wisdom, Bran said stiffly, kindly leave who should worry me to my deciding. Mistress Moraine and Master Lan are guests in my inn, and decent, respectable folk, so I say. Neither of them has called me a fool in front of the whole council. Neither of them has told the council it hasn't a full set of wits among them.
It seems my estimate was too high by half, Nynaeve retorted.
She strode away without a backward glance, leaving Bran's jaw working as he searched for a reply. Egwene looked at Rand as if she were going to speak, then darted after the Wisdom instead. Rand knew there must be some way to stop her from leaving the Two Rivers, but the only way he could think of was not one he was prepared to take, even if she was willing. And she had as much said she was not willing at all, which made him feel even worse.
That young woman wants a husband, Senbuie growled, bouncing on his toes.
His face was purple and getting darker.
She lacks proper respect. We're the village council, not boys raking her yard, and...
The mayor breathed heavily through his nose and suddenly rounded on the old thatcher.
Be quiet, Sen. Stop acting like a black-veiled Aiel.
The skinny man froze in his toes in astonishment. The mayor never let his temper get the best of him. Bran glared.
Burn me, but we have better things to be about than this foolishness. Or do you intend to prove Nynaeve right?
With that, he stumped back into the inn and slammed the door behind him. The council members glanced at Sen, then moved off in their separate directions. All but Harald Luhan, who accompanied the stony-visaged thatcher, talking quietly. The blacksmith was the only one who could ever get Sen to see reason. Rand went to meet his father, and his friends trailed after him.
I've never seen Master Alvear so mad, was the first thing Rand said, getting him a disgusted look from Matt.
"A mayor and the wisdom seldom agree," Tam said. "And they agree less than usual today, that's all. It's the same in every village."
"What about the false dragon?"
Matt asked, and Perrin added eager murmurs.
"What about the Aes Sedai?"
Tam shook his head slowly. "Master Fane knew little more than he had already told, at least little of interest to us. Battles won or lost, cities taken and retaken. All in Giladan, thank the light. It hasn't spread, or had not the last Master Fane knew."
"Battles interest me," Matt said, and Perrin added, "What did he say about them?"
"Battles don't interest me, Matrim," Tam said. "But I'm sure he will be glad to tell you all about them later. What does interest me is that we shouldn't have to worry about them here, as far as the Council can tell. We can see no reason for Aes Sedai to come here on their way south. And as for the return journey, they aren't likely to want to cross the Forest of Shadows and swim the White River." Rand and the others chuckled at the idea. There were three reasons why no one came into the Two Rivers except from the north, by the way of Tarin Ferry. The Mountains of Mist in the west were the first, of course, and the Mire blocked the east just as effectively. To the south was the White River, which got its name from the way rocks and boulders churned its swift waters to froth. And beyond the White lay the Forest of Shadows. Few Two Rivers folk had ever crossed the White, and fewer still returned if they did. It was generally agreed, though, that the Forest of Shadows stretched south for 100 miles or more, without a road or a village, but with plenty of wolves and bears.
"So that's an end to it for us," Matt said. He sounded at least a little disappointed.
"Not quite," Tam said. "Day after tomorrow we will send men to Devonride and Watch Hill and Tarin Ferry, too, to arrange for a watch to be kept. Riders along the White and the Tarin both, and patrols between. It should be done today, but only the mayor agrees with me. The rest can't see asking anyone to spend Beltane off riding across the Two Rivers."
"But I thought you said we didn't have to worry," Perrin said, and Tam shook his head.
"I said should not, boy, not did not. I've seen men die because they were sure that what should not happen would not. Besides, the fighting will stir up all sorts of people. Most will just be trying to find safety, but others will be looking for a way to profit from the confusion. We'll offer any of the first a helping hand, but we must be ready to send the second type on their way."
Abruptly, Matt spoke up. "Can we be part of it? I want to anyway. You know I can ride as well as anyone in the village."
"You want a few weeks of cold, boredom, and sleeping rough?" Tam chuckled. "Likely that's all there will be to it." "I hope that's all. Well, we're out of the way even for refugees. But you can speak to Master Alvir if your mind is made up. Rand, it's time for us to be getting back to the farm."
Rand blinked in surprise. "I thought we were staying for winter night."
"Things need seeing to at the farm, and I need you with me."
"Even so, we don't have to leave for hours yet. And I want to volunteer for the patrols, too."
"We are going now," his father replied in a tone that brooked no argument. In a softer voice, he added, "We'll be back tomorrow and plenty of time for you to speak to the mayor. And plenty of time for festival, too. 5 minutes now, then meet me in the stable."
"Are you going to join Rand and me on the watch?" Matt asked Perrin as Tam left. "I'll bet there's nothing like this ever happened in the Two Rivers before. Why, if we get up to the Tarn, we might even see soldiers, or who knows what. Even tinkers."
"I expect I will," Perrin said slowly. "If Master Luhan doesn't need me, that is."
"The war is in Giladan," Rand snapped. With an effort, he lowered his voice. "The war is in Giladan. And the Aes Sedai are the light knows where, but none of it is here. The man in the black cloak is, or have you forgotten him already?"
The others exchanged embarrassed looks.
"Sorry, Rand," Matt muttered, "but a chance to do something besides milk my da's cows doesn't come along very often." He straightened under their startled stares. "Well, I do milk them, and every day, too." "The Black Rider," Rand reminded them. "What if he hurts somebody?"
"Maybe he's a refugee from the war," Perrin said doubtfully.
"Whatever he is,"
Matt said. The watch will find him.
Maybe, Rand said, but he seems to disappear when he wants to. It might be better if they knew to look for him.
We'll tell Master Alvear when we volunteer for the patrols, Matt said, and he'll tell the Council, and they'll tell the Watch.
The Council? Perrin said incredulously. We'd be lucky if the Mayor didn't laugh out loud. Master Luhan and Rand's father already think the two of us are jumping at shadows.
Rand sighed.
If we're going to do it, we might as well do it now. He won't laugh any louder today than he will tomorrow.
Maybe, Perrin said with a sidelong glance at Matt, we should try finding some others who've seen him.
We'll see just about everybody in the village tonight.
Matt's scowl deepened, but he still did not say anything.
All of them understood that Perrin meant they should find witnesses who were more reliable than Matt.
He won't laugh any louder tomorrow, Perrin added when Rand hesitated. And I'd just as soon have somebody else with us when we go to him. Half the village would suit me fine.
Rand nodded slowly. He could already hear Master Alvear laughing. More witnesses certainly could not hurt. And if three of them had seen the fellow, others had to have too.
They must have.
Tomorrow, then. You two find whoever you can tonight, and tomorrow we go to the mayor.
After that?
They looked at him silently, no one raising the question of what happened if they could not find anyone else who had seen the black-cloaked man. The question was clear in their eyes, though, and he had no answer. He sighed heavily.
I'd better go now. My father will be wondering if I fell into a hole.
Followed by their goodbyes, he trotted around to the stable yard where the high-wheeled cart stood propped on its shafts. The stable was a long, narrow building topped by a high-peaked, thatched roof. Stalls, their floors covered with straw, filled both sides of the dim interior, lit only by the open double doors at either end. The peddler's team munched their oats in the eight stalls, and Master Alvear's massive Durans, the team he hired out when farmers had hauling beyond the abilities of their own horses, filled six more. But only three others were occupied. Rand thought he could match up horse and rider with no trouble. The tall, deep-chested black stallion that swung up his head fiercely had to be Lan's. The sleek white mare with an arched neck, her quick steps as graceful as a girl dancing, even in the stall, could only belong to Moraine. And the third unfamiliar horse, a rangy, slab-sided gelding of a dusty brown, fit Tom Merrillan perfectly. Tam stood in the rear of the stable, holding Bella by a lead rope, and speaking quietly to Hugh and Tad. Before Rand had taken two steps into the stable, his father nodded to the stableman and brought Bella out, wordlessly gathering up Rand as he went. They harnessed the shaggy mare in silence. Tam appeared so deep in thought that Rand held his tongue. He did not really look forward to trying to convince his father about the black-cloaked rider, much less the mayor. Tomorrow would have to be time enough, when Matt and the rest had found others who had seen the man. If they found others. As the cart lurched into motion, Rand took his bow and quiver from the back, awkwardly belting the quiver at his waist as he half-trotted alongside. When they reached the last row of houses in the village, he knocked an arrow, carrying it half-raised and partly drawn. There was nothing to see except mostly leafless trees, but his shoulders tightened. The black rider could be on them before either of them knew it. There might not be time to draw the bow if he was not already halfway to it. He knew he could not keep up the tension on the bowstring for long. He had made the bow himself, and Tam was one of the few others in the district who could even draw it all the way to the cheek. He cast around for something to take his mind off thinking about the dark rider. Surrounded by the forest, their cloaks flapping in the wind, it was not easy.
Father, he said finally, I don't understand why the council had to question Padan Fane.
With an effort, he took his eyes off the woods and looked across Bella at Tam.
It seems to me the decision you reached could have been made right on the spot. The mayor frightened everybody half out of their wits, talking about Aes Sedai and the false dragon here in the Two Rivers.
People are funny, Rand. The best of them are. Take Harald Luhan. Master Luhan is a strong man and a brave one, but he can't bear to see butchering done. Turns pale as a sheet.
What does that have to do with anything? Everybody knows Master Luhan can't stand the sight of blood, and nobody but the Coplins and the Congers thinks anything of it.
Just this, lad. People don't always think or behave the way you might believe they would. Those folk back there, Let the hail beat their crops into the mud and the wind take off every roof in the district, and the wolves kill half their livestock, and they'll roll up their sleeves and start from scratch. They'll grumble, but they won't waste any time with it. But you give them just the thought of Aes Sedai and a false dragon in Gil-Dan. And soon enough, they'll start thinking that Gil-Dan is not that far the other side of the Forest of Shadows, and a straight line from Tar-Valon to Gil-Dan wouldn't pass that much to the east of us. As if the Aes Sedai wouldn't take the road through Camelin and Lugard instead of traveling cross-country. By tomorrow morning, half the village would have been sure the entire war was about to descend on us. It would take weeks to undo. A fine Beltane that would make. So Bran gave them the idea before they could get it for themselves. They've seen the council take the problem under consideration, and by now they'll be hearing what we decided. They chose us for the village council because they trust we can reason things out in the best way for everybody. They trust our opinions. Even Sen's, which doesn't say much for the rest of us, I suppose. At any rate, they will hear there isn't anything to worry about, and they'll believe it. It is not that they couldn't reach the same conclusion, or would not, eventually. But this way, we won't have festival ruined, and nobody has to spend weeks worrying about something that isn't likely to happen. If it does, against all odds, well, the patrols will give us enough warning to do what we can. I truly don't think it will come to that, though. Rand puffed out his cheeks. Apparently, being on the council was far more complicated than he had believed. The cart rumbled on along the quarry road. "Did anyone besides Perrin see this strange rider?" Tam asked.
"Matt did, but..."
Rand blinked, then stared across Bella's back at his father.
"You believe me? I have to go back. I have to tell them."
Tam's shout halted him as he turned to run back to the village.
"Hold, lad, hold.
Do you think I waited this long to speak for no reason?" Reluctantly, Rand kept on beside the cart, still creaking along behind patient Bella.
"What made you change your mind? Why can't I tell the others?"
"They'll know soon enough. At least Perrin will. Matt, I'm not sure of. Word must be gotten to the farms as best it can. But in another hour, there won't be anyone in Emmonsfield above 16, those who can be responsible about it at least, who doesn't know a stranger is skulking around, and likely not the sort you would invite to festival. The winter has been bad enough without this to scare the young ones."
"Festival," Rand said. "If you had seen him, you wouldn't want him closer than 10 miles. 100, maybe."
"Perhaps so," Tam said placidly. "He could be just a refugee from the troubles in Gil-Dan, or more likely a thief who thinks the pickings will be easier here than in Beorlan or Tarin Ferry. Even so, no one around here has so much they can afford to have it stolen. If the man is trying to escape the war, well, that's still no excuse for scaring people. Once the watch is mounted, it should either find him or frighten him off."
"I hope it frightens him off. But why do you believe me now, when you didn't this morning?"
"I had to believe my own eyes then, lad, and I saw nothing." Tam shook his grizzled head. "Only young men see this fellow, it seems. When Harald Luhan mentioned Perrin jumping shadows, though, it all came out. John Thane's oldest son saw him, too, and so did Samuel Craw's boy, Bandry. Well, when four of you say you've seen a thing, and solid lads all, we start thinking maybe it's there, whether we can see it or not. All except Sen, of course. Anyway, that's why we're going home. With both of us away, this stranger could be up to any kind of mischief there. If not for festival, I wouldn't come back tomorrow either. But we can't make ourselves prisoners in our own homes just because this fellow is lurking about."
"I didn't know about Banner Lem," Rand said. "The rest of us were going to the mayor tomorrow. But we were worried he wouldn't believe us either."
"Gray hairs don't mean our brains have curdled," Tam said dryly. "So you keep a sharp eye. Maybe I'll catch sight of him, too, if he shows up again." Rand settled down to do just that. He was surprised to realize that his step felt lighter. The knots were gone from his shoulders. He was still scared, but it was not so bad as it had been. Tam and he were just as alone on the quarry road as they had been that morning, but in some way he felt as if the entire village were with them. That others knew and believed made all the difference. There was nothing the black-cloaked horseman could do that the people of Emmons Field could not handle together.